Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Monday, June 2nd. Man, the pages of the calendar continue just flying off the wall there. We're broadcasting live today from the NBA's the NBA's Chairman's Conference being held here at the spectacular Broadmoor in Colorado Springs. Talk about a beautiful spot. So gorgeous. And, of course, temperatures up in down in Texas getting a little warm, so it's kind of nice to get up in some really nice temperatures here. Later in the broadcast, we're starting the Hot Topic. In the Hot Topic segment, we're going to be starting a multi-week series on loan originations. We're going to be really focusing on everything originations, everything you could possibly put into that topic. And, by the way, we'd like you to email us. Email me at D as in David, L-Y-K-K-E-N, at mbs-team.com with things that you would like to see covered in this series, and we will make sure we get guests on to talk about, or we'll cover it as well. I'll be kicking off the series in the Hot Topic segment a little bit later in the broadcast, and we're going to be talking about what hasn't changed, what has, and what we can anticipate and what we will be having and talking about in the many, many broadcasts on this very important topic. I'm really looking forward to this one. Also, I'm attending this week the Mastermind 2013 conference in Las Vegas that has got all the well-known public speakers on the topic of loan origination. So we're going to have a lot of fresh material and have some of those speakers as guests later on in this series as well. But it's really exciting, going to be broadcast, a series of broadcasts, and we're looking forward to having you be a part of it. By the way, I want to say this is the first of a kind broadcast. It's produced by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, and it was recently the proud recipient of the Innovation Award, thanks to our friends at Progress and Lending, Tony Garitano. Thank you so much for awarding us this, and we appreciate it. Also, a special thank you goes out to our listeners who are a part of this broadcast each week and telling others about it. Special thank you to our sponsors, United Guarantee and A La Mode. They are significant in making this all possible. So let's get into what's going on. A guy that's been absent from a number of the broadcasts here recently is Joe Farr because of conferences and travel and all of the holidays going on. Joe, it's good to have you back here with us.
Well, it's
live.
Good to be back, but I think I just need to point something out. When I left, the last time I was on this show, MBS prices were 3% higher than they are right now. So,
wow.
I don't know what happened.
What, Joe? I mean, just can't leave
I
the broadcast.
I do know what happened.
Well, we're going to get into it. Let's talk about it because you've got a great
idea. Yeah,
I do know what happened.
Normally
we start with what happened today, but what's going on today. But let's start with what's really kind of bring us forward to today, and then we'll get into today. So bring us forward while you've been gone.
Well, as I mentioned, and everyone knows this all too well, we've had a significant reduction in MBS prices and rising rates. And impetus for all this was the April jobs report that came out on May 3rd. It was better than expected by enough, and then prior months were improved significantly, that it really has created a shift in sentiment. I think investors buying MBS now are just unwilling to accept these very low yields. I mean, toward the end of April, yields were 2.3% on 30-year fixed-rate mortgage-backed securities. And for a while, those were okay, you know, because they were a safe place to put your money and still earn some yield. But there are now many other places to put your money. The stock market's doing fine. Europe's not about to implode. The banking system's strong enough now. There's not going to be a collapse there. So the shift in sentiment has happened, I think, and it's going to be hard to go back. Today we're getting some of it back, but just a tiny bit. Bill Gross, who we all know from PIMCO, called the end of the bull bond market at the end of April, and I think he's probably right. I think I think we've seen the best of the prices that we're going to see in this cycle, and maybe for a very, very long time.
Very long time, yeah.
But, you know, we still have very low mortgage rates, and certainly they're low enough to cause people to still feel good about buying loans, and some still that haven't refinanced still have a chance to improve their rates with a refinance. So that's kind of where we are. I can't blame you for it, Dave. I think it has more to do with an improving, slightly improving economy, and the likelihood the Fed's going to begin tapering on their purchases. You know, maybe sooner than some people might have thought.
Well, that's what's going on today. That's a summary of all that's been going on, and certainly it has been a dramatic change since you were on last. But give us an update on exactly what's happening today.
Well, today, and today's kind of a good example of things. A weak ISM number came out, and MBS prices jumped half a point. And what's happening there is that people are using every little bit of data to help them to anticipate when the Fed might start tapering. When, you know, they're such a big player in the mortgage market. They're, precisely, I don't know, but 75% of new issue MBS are being purchased by the Fed. And when they start to stop that, when they begin their tapering, it's going to have a big effect on MBS price. We've seen some of that make its way into the market so far. But right now we're up. Actually, we've been up as much as 12 this morning, and we're giving a bit of that back. We just put out an alert that we'd fallen from up 12 to up 6, and now we're up only 2. So. A little bit of a reversal going on right now. Construction spending and ISM came in a little weaker than expected. But last week was crazy, wasn't it?
There were
only 4 work days last week, and one of the biggest correspondents.
One of the most active weeks.
Issued 13 different rate sheets last week in 4 days, just
wow.
As an indication how terribly volatile things have been. There was a 131 basis point drop in prices.
Wow.
13 rate sheets in 4 days.
Wow. Interesting.
Tuesday, 131 basis point drop in prices. Big global stock market rally, strong consumer confidence helped push all that.
Yep.
And but ordinarily, you wouldn't expect that much movement to have occurred on what came out. So again, it's more overreaction of economic indicators to what the Fed, what's that going to have, what influence is that going to have on the Fed. It was a big move, probably too big a move. We got a little of that back on Wednesday, and had another volatile day on Thursday where there were multiple rate sheets, but not much net movement. And then on Friday, we saw prices drop again, a good Chicago PMI and another good consumer sentiment number. So for the week, MBS prices were off about a point, which is a pretty big move. You know, it's just a third of the big move since the end of the month, the beginning of May. But all this is overreaction to economic events and how that's going to influence the Fed tapering program, and a lot of this is spilling over into the stock market as well. Lots of times you're going to see stocks and MBS move in the same direction, meaning there's an expectation if they're moving higher, there's an expectation for more Fed easing or a longer time in their current program without tapering, or if they move down, there's an expectation that tapering is going to begin soon. So,
man.
Yeah, as introduction to this week, we've got mostly labor data coming out this week. ADP comes out on Wednesday. Jobless claims, which ordinarily aren't a big market mover, but they've been one lately.
Yeah.
Jobless claims on Thursday, and then the jobs report on Friday. So, even more so will these events create an overreaction in investors' minds, I believe, especially if there's much deviation from consensus. Everyone's looking for these numbers to help them determine when the Fed's going to begin to taper. And So be on the lookout. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all of them are pretty big.
Every day
ISM services
could be a big
comes
day.
Out. Every day could be a big day, and it's just going to stay this way, I think, until a clearer exit is revealed by the Fed.
Well, it is very interesting to see what has changed and how quickly it can change, my friend. I tell you, folks that don't have a service or don't have MBS Quote Line are really just behind the eight ball on all the changes that are coming. So, quickly, your thoughts on the jobless claims for Thursday. What are they projected to be? And because I think that could have some real interesting because it's been a little bit flat and so on. So, what are they projecting right now?
They're projecting 350,000, which is about that's a neutral. Expectation. That's not overly aggressive or it's not overly bearish. So, and it's about what came out last month. So
yeah.
Or last week.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So any deviation from that
could have a big impact on things. Absolutely, and that's the reason
Absolutely.
I brought it up. And I don't know if you mentioned that number. I'm running the switchboard and doing different things at the moment, so you may have mentioned
no.
that number earlier. So it's worth repeating, even if you did bring it up.
And I didn't mention the current estimate for non-farm payrolls is about 160 to 165,000, which is in line with what came out last month. So again, semi-neutral. That sounds a little bit low, but we'll see. We'll see again if the actual number comes out too much different.
Well, I appreciate you so much for being back. Good to have you back, Missy. I tried to do the best job of filling in for you, but you provide me good information a lot of the time. But it's one of those things where it's just almost difficult to do it because you have so much data there in front of you. Appreciate you, Joe. And
thanks,
we've got
Dave.
Paul Moll. Paul, I see Paul's dialed in, so we're going to be coming to him right after the ad break. But it's good to have you back. And folks, we'll be right back after
good to be
this
back.
Quick. Good. It's good to have you back. We'll be right back after this quick ad break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. We're privileged and honored to have Paul Mollo bringing us the latest in the headlines each and every week. He's got an outstanding website called imfnews.com. That stands for Inside Mortgage Finance News.com. It's outstanding. And Paul, it's good to have you with us on the broadcast. What? So much
good to be here.
So there's so much to track in IMF News. So what are you following? What are you reporting on? And it's got your attention.
Oh, it's been a barn burner couple of days, I got to tell you. On Friday, we broke a story on imfnews.com about how FHA sent out administrative letters to, we're told it's somewhere between 12 and 15 shops. We're not sure exactly what this is about, but PHH disclosed in a recent filing that they got some subpoenas from the U.S. Attorney's Office and also from the IG at HUD. So, you know, there's some speculation that FHA is looking for some large settlements to help, of course, replenish their depleted funds. So we'll see. Or you know, listen, there's always stuff there that the agencies can go after. Either they're looking to correct the practice or, you know, they could be looking for money or they see something egregious. We'll know soon. Of course, PHH isn't commenting much. John Bancroft, our data guy here, editor-in-chief, he crunched some new jumbo numbers. The nice thing is that it looks like jumbo volumes are holding up fairly well.
Yeah, they are. Pretty
jumbo
well.
Jumbo originations. Yeah, that's, you know, there's lots of talk about, you know, a couple more pickups in the GSE, and you know, non-GSE jumbos are going to be competing with GSE jumbos, or you know, even more private capital is going to come into the jumbo space. Chase is out there with securitization, Everbank, and of course Redwood is always working on stuff. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Big story today. I think it's fascinating, and I know the crew here at IMF does. A fund called Fair Home put out a statement saying they own $2.4 billion of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac
junior
preferred stock. Now, that's not what they paid for it.
that's the face
value. You know, I'm sure they bought it for pennies on the dollar. We had heard a number late last week, which we also put on IMFnews.com, that someone out there had ponied up $250 to $500 million to buy GSE stock. And it very well could be Fairholme. It's run by a guy who I don't really know named Bruce Berkowitz, who I guess did time at Lehman Brothers and Smith Barney in the late 1990s. So, you know, I guess, you know, I just think that whole Fannie Freddie thing is an amazing story about, you know, they were pariahs and beat up on everyone and their grandma in this town, and now they're earning money hand over fist. They could be sitting on some big markups in their portfolio on securities. I mean, and even if they don't take these deferred tax assets, they, you know, combined they could turn in earnings next year of $30 to $40 billion, and right now all that money gets swept into the U.S. Treasury. So, and of course, there's no movement or real movement or consensus that anyone in this town being Washington, is going to do anything to, you know, pass a bill and fix anything. So it's basically up to Edward DeMarco to, you know, to manage these guys and, you know, keep an eye on them and, you know, let them be the stabilizing force in housing finance that they are. So, you know, it's a very, very interesting story. And it's interesting how here in Washington, the Washington Post has sort of ignored the whole story, which,
that,
you know, which
that is interesting.
Yeah, I don't quite get it. Meanwhile, today we had Ben Brandon Ivey of our staff report about MBA's has a new concept paper. You know, they're once again pounding the tom-toms for parity on guarantee fees, and there has been a tightening of prices between big and small lenders, but it sounds like it's not there enough. And we also have some story about the Mel Watt nomination on a daily by Charles Wisniewski. And Texas might allow for HECM purchase loans in the Lone Star State. That's interesting. Not a fascinating story, but interesting. So just, again, a ton of news out there.
Lots of news, and you're tracking it all. Mel Watts, any thoughts on that? What are you, as you're looking at that, I've heard he has some pretty stiff headwinds going into it. Not a lot of people are thinking he's going to be replacing DeMarco anytime
soon.
Yeah,
now
your thoughts?
Right now that sounds like the situation. I mean, for some reason, the administration is still out there saying we believe in principal reductions in GSE loans. And, you know, a lot of people I talk to, and you probably have your own opinion, you know, at this point, you don't need principal reductions. No one in the mortgage industry wants to open up a precedent where you're rewriting the basic mortgage contract. I mean, there's guys out there doing private restructurings, but that's stuff they're holding in their own portfolio. No one in the industry wants someone to set a precedent where the mortgage contract's rewritten by the federal government. They're just, you know, they're looking long-term at the can of worms that opens up legally and servicing-wise and otherwise. So, you know, with home prices improving so much and, you know, delinquencies dropping and HARP, you know, still very, very strong, you know, why do you need a principal reduction program?
Exactly right. Yeah, that doesn't seem to be working. I thought David Stevens' comments here at the MBA Chairman's Conference just this morning said that it, just the fact that he's being interviewed or they've started the confirmation process, that it brings it, and if he were to come in, it's just going to add uncertainty to an already somewhat uncertain world. So it's very interesting to see what's going to come of that. But we appreciate you coming in. You're so busy tracking all this. The fact you take some time out of your day, Paul, to be with us is really appreciated. Again, the website. That's a thrill to have you. The website, listeners, is make sure you check it out. Sign up for their is daily. Does it come out more than one time a day? Is it just every day, or are you updating
it's
it constantly?
Once a day. We don't bombard you with a lot of stories you don't need, like some of our competitors who I won't name.
Yeah.
But it's www.imfnews.com. Five stories and five short items a day, 10 total. We only give you what you need, what we think you need. So
that's the value of it. It's just so focused. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. I appreciate it very, very much. Alice Alvey, let's get over and find out what is going on in the world of legislative updates. There's so much we can talk about there. And my gosh, is there ever a shortage of on your topic? It's just nonstop. But before we go there, I want to talk about something even a little more exciting that's going on right near and dear to you. So do you want to make the big announcement here?
Yes, Mortgage U is now Indicom Mortgage U. So we are very pleased to announce that as a company, we have joined forces with Indicom Global Services. We worked for two. Yes, it's very exciting. We worked together for a couple of years on some e-learning projects, and we just found that the synergies between the two companies were so fantastic that we said we could just do so more if we were just all one company. So all of us at Mortgage U are a part of Indicom and running the Mortgage Learning Division. We are going to be expanding our online training, expanding everything that we do to be able to serve more clients on a broader basis. And, of course, with their wonderful support and all of our initial integration here over the last month or so has been absolutely fantastic. Wonderful, wonderful, high-quality people to work with. So I'm very excited.
Well, congratulations. That is very exciting. Alice Alvey, president of Mortgage U, now is working and owned by Indicom. And you're still the president, still running the whole show. So that's good.
Yes,
thrilled
we
for
still
you.
Have all that. Yes. Indicom Mortgage U is our new president. So we're excited.
And we're very excited for you. Let's talk about what's going on legislatively. I'm looking over your notes. There's so much again, so let's get into it for the sake of our listeners.
Well, I think obviously the biggest thing was more news on QM came out last week that we now have some framework to work within under the qualified mortgage points test. And then also for those of you who are watching the small creditor exemption in the rural underserved markets descriptions, that component was very important to you as this all, that aspect of it starts to unfold as well. So we were hoping for a lot of changes and a lot of revisions to the what is included in the three-point test. And basically what happened is we got most of it. So when I read the headlines, it's interesting to me that some of the headlines are that this is all great, we got exactly what we wanted, and I go, well, I don't think we really did. I think there's still going to be some challenges out there. Definitely a downside to mortgage brokers where they're going to feel a little bit that, you know, it's still double counting their compensation. So the way the final piece came out was it does remove the compensation to individual loan originator employees from the calculation. So we talked quite a bit on other shows that they wanted to count the points, but then also try and drill down to the funds that were actually paid to the loan officer. So at least we got that out of the equation. And that does cover compensation paid to an LO, both at a lender and at an originator. Or I'm sorry, at a broker company.
But
compensation paid to affiliates will still be in this. Compensation paid directly to a mortgage broker by a creditor is still in this number. So, again, we'll all be sitting down working with our calculations to see what's in and what's not and how will this potentially impact pricing. And we can talk about that on one of our future shows. It does establish that there's a small creditor portfolio that if you are a small creditor, you originate $2 billion or less, and you and your affiliates originate 500 or fewer loans, that those entities will be able to have their own kind of zone, safe harbor zone for a qualified mortgage. And what's nice for those entities is they won't have to be restricted to a 43% DTI, and so that's their first relief that they will get, in the first phases. They will have the opportunity now with this overlap with Truth in Lending is immediately applications June 1st, this small creditor exemption will apply also for whether or not they have to maintain escrow accounts on high-priced mortgage loans. So, I mean, we could go on in lots of detail for what's going on for the small entities, but one of the things that's key in the QM is that it is just focused on the dollar volume for the size of the entity in defining small creditor, the rural and underserved markets do not get the safe harbor in the qualified mortgage. So that was another big distinction. Lots of news sources have everything out there. I suggest you read it all to try and, you know, get to the bottom of your aspects. And then we are going to be publishing some more information about this and creating training for companies to better understand this. So at least we know now what we can start working with to calculate the 3 points. The next piece is the rural...
Big happenings, yes.
Pardon?
That's big happenings. Okay.
I think so, too, because now people can move forward a little bit. Rural and underserved markets and small creditors, like I said, have a lot going on. So that group needs to kind of get their arms around who's in, who's out, and the lists are on the website. So once January 1st hits, this group will also get a higher APR threshold that they can work with before their QM triggers. So lots of advantages for smaller companies. We'll see what happens. The comment period closes today. This is your last chance to get in comments about the DTI rule and income calculations that we've been talking about. So we're rolling closer to these implementation dates. We're down to 6 months. Maybe we need a QM clock ticking, Dave. I'll have to work on that one.
We'll put that on our new website, maybe.
Yeah, when should you have your act together? And that might even have to be September 1st. and kind of raise the thermometer right as it gets closer to the end of the year. But the reality, folks, is it is going to be variable, and we'll report back next week on some more on where the technology folks are standing, because we're going to be talking to some technology folks during the next week to see how they're doing and report back to you on the implementation and how they're going to be able to help. So I will send it back to you, Dave. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and we've got Tony Garitano coming on here in just a minute to talk about some of this as well, and then the Profit Doctor. So there's just so much to cover on this. But, Alice, thank you so much. Again, congratulations to you on the sale of the company and new partnership. And we're looking for many, many wonderful things coming ahead from Mortgage U. Thank you so much, Alice. Appreciate it. All right, folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. We've got Tony Garitano on the call. Normally we have the Profit Doctor, but I'm switching it up a little bit because I want the Profit Doctor asking and getting in on some things. I cut him off. He didn't get some questions that he had for Tony here recently. So, we're running with you first, then we're going to get the Profit Doctor. We're going to go right into the Profit Doctor segment. Tony, good to have you with us on the broadcast, as always.
Good to be here. Hi, Dave.
Right. What are some of the things that lenders should be focused on from a technology standpoint as we move away from a refinance market into a purchase market, which, by the way, is my topic that I'm talking about here at the Chairman's Conference next week? There's a panel of us. So what should be the focus from a technology standpoint?
Well, there are a lot of things that we could certainly talk about, and I think that this fits in nice to your series that you talked about in the beginning of the broadcast when it comes to originations. But the one thing that I found particularly interesting as a result of talking to people at the Innovations event in April was that a lot of people are very focused on the user experience. So what that means is that lenders are focused on creating a better or the best user experience for borrowers or TPOs, depending on how they conduct their business. And that requires, at the very least, a redesign of existing technology, at the most, implementation of new technology. So I just thought that was a new wrinkle that I hadn't heard much about in the past, that might be something that you want to flesh out more in future segments.
Yeah, we will. In fact, it very much like to. But on the other side of the coin, how do technology vendors prepare for the purchase market? There's certain adjustments have to be made there, especially with all the QM rules and things change.
I agree. I mean, as we've always talked about since, you know, starting last year and the year before, the technology vendors that I talk to, Dave, I mean, they're spending 50% of their R&D budget on compliance.
Mm.
But the problem with that is that you can't just retrofit compliance into a technology system because it affects, to go back to the first question, the user experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that the challenge for vendors is how do we keep compliant or keep our clients compliant, and how do we maintain the usability of our systems? And I think that that's going to be a big topic in the years ahead, especially given that a lot of the mortgage technology in the space is still older mainframe.
Yeah, it's older stuff.
Legacy,
it's been around forever.
Technology.
Legacy stuff.
I mean, the user experience is not good to begin with. So there are going to be a lot of, updates, enhancements in the way people interact with technology in the next few years.
Interesting stuff. Let's get the Profit Doctor to join in. Handy, you've had the last time I had you on, there was a question you had for Tony, and I had your mic muted. I was so sorry about that. But anyway, Profit Doctor, you there?
Hey, Dave. Well, you know, you assume two things. One is that I have a memory that lasts longer than a goldfish memory. That I can remember what it is I was going to ask Tony from 2 weeks ago, because I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday.
Yeah, it's so funny. Well, I mean, I'd love your thoughts on it. But you mean, because you and the head of our technology department are focusing on these issues a lot, and we were talking this last week about just how many technology vendors are struggling with all that's going on out there, Andy.
Well, yeah, and they're going to continue to struggle because there's so many changes happening, and the development requirements are so intense that unless they have a fairly robust infrastructure of IT support staff to be able to address all these changes, they're going to struggle to keep up. And the one thing that mortgage bankers do is they always assume that their technology provider's compliance requirements, that the mortgage banker's compliance requirements are accomplished by the system, the LOS. The calculations are right. And as Alice can let you know, that's not always the case. Sometimes
the
rollout of things happen and updates aren't done and APR calculations aren't correct. So just because it's an LOS doesn't mean the numbers are always right. And so as the changes continue to happen, one of the unfortunate realities is that the development teams are going to have to be able to keep up with all this stuff, keep up with it well, keep up with it quickly, you know. And so it kind of means that the bigger guys win because they have the ability to keep up.
Tony, that is the case, and we appreciate you coming on the broadcast. You want to add anything to that before you have to exit?
I think Andy is right, and I think that that's why you're seeing a lot of LOS conversions, and I think that that's going to continue, because if these LOSs can't keep up and they can't maintain accuracy, lenders are going to know it, and they're going to switch.
They're going to switch. Tony, thanks so much for taking time to join. Go ahead, Andy. I saw you saying, Sarah, going somewhere.
I just wanted to comment on Tony's last comment there, is that I'm not certain always that the mortgage companies know the LOSs are wrong. I think it's kind of like checking the weather on your iPhone. It says it's 73, so it doesn't matter if it's snowing. If your iPhone says it's 73, it must be. So, because the internet never lies, and the LOSs never lie. So I think there's a paradigm that people have about their technology, and that they assume that it's right. And I would challenge that a bit. That I think they should test it. I think it's good for Tony to suggest that they test it. Fortunately, my experience with a lot of lenders is that they don't.
Yep. Tony, you see that to be the case?
I agree, but I think what's going to happen is you're going to have the regulators do the testing for them in some cases. And I think what will happen is, you know, some of these technology systems may have to get certification, but beyond that, regulators are going to start cracking down more on lenders as they already have, and that's going to make these
lenders
point the finger at the LOS.
And that means they need to start retaining Alice to come in and double check all these things to make sure that they're good shape. And
well,
go ahead, Alice. You have something you want to ask?
I was just going to say. Yeah, I think one point I want to make sure everybody realizes, too, is, you know, your OOS provider can still only go so far because they're not going to take the full liability for how you implement your policies and procedures. They can certainly make recommendations and have options for controls, but the ultimate decision is up to the lender on how they actually execute that.
So true. So true. Tony, thank you so much. We could go on this. We just have to set up in this production. We're talking about production, and technology will be a big part of it. So we're going to have you on just one whole segment talking about that and really getting Andy and the Profit Doctor and Alice and Joe all diving in on this topic so we can look at it. But thanks so much for taking the time to be with us, Tony.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
It is always a pleasure. Be sure to check out his website at www.progressinlending.com. Tony's got a lot of great articles out there, good information, and it is the go-to place for everything technology. Profit Doctor, let's get over to you. One of the things that we were talking about last week was technology, and there's just so many things that we want to pull on the Profit Doctor's wisdom about. But, I mean, there's just a lot of these guys are really struggling getting these things implemented. The technology, I mean, it's just immense, and the cost that's going into it. So what words of wisdom do you have for us this week, Profit Doctor?
Well, in the technology deployment aspect of all of this is essential, that it be done well, that it not be underestimated, which it usually is, and that the cost of getting a system well run is usually underestimated as well. So this all dovetails back into a conflict that we're going to be facing as an industry, where our infrastructure build-out has to be more robust, more dynamic, more scalable, and it's going to cost money to make it that way. The LOS conversions are going to continue. The deployment of the LOS within a shop is going to be more expensive. It's almost like whatever they say the development cost is or the deployment cost is, double it, and you're probably going to be getting close for a big LOS development for a bigger LOS deployment aside from the cost of the system. You're probably looking at over $100,000 to get it fully deployed correctly and well with the workflows assessed and all the pieces.
$100,000. And we heard those numbers from someone. We heard someone actually quoting that, and they're a contractor that comes in and supports a lot of these. And anywhere from on the low end was $25,000-$30,000 on up to as much as $100,000. I mean,
that low end was not a mortgage bank. That low end was somebody who doesn't do deliveries or securities or hedging. That was kind of a little. So the reality is, for most mortgage bankers listening to this show, is $75,000 to $125,000. So, but the point is that the dovetail of all that, Dave, is that as you have these system costs that are going to be expanding, you have all these compliance costs that are going to be expanding. You've got all these accounting costs because you can't have just a bookkeeper in the middle desk in the basement doing your books now. It's gotten a lot more complicated. So we're having to hire degreed accountants in accounting, and we're having to have a compliance officer on board now. We've got to make sure our IT deployment is more robust. So all these things, all these foundational things have to happen in order to support the production activity. While at the same time, as we have a tip up in rates and maybe a continuing rise in rates, that's going to slow down the refi boom. As we have a slowdown in the refi boom, people are going to want to feed the factory. They're going to want to bring in the consistent level of volume. And so what do they do? Because they spent all this money on the infrastructure, so they got to keep the volume going in order to cover the overhead that they built.
Right.
So in order to cover the overhead, they're going to keep pumping volume. But because everybody now is going to be looking for more volume as refi slows down, so what are people going to do? They're going to lower margins. And as they lower margins, that's going to squeeze profitability. So at the same time, you got to spend more money to fix all this infrastructure stuff. You also are going to have to lower your prices to be competitive. You know, Dave, I'm sure you remember this. Long ago, there used to be gas station wars. There'd be three gas stations on a quarter, maybe four gas stations on a quarter. And back when gas was less than a dollar, or sometimes even less than that, they would have these gas wars where one gas station would lower their price a penny, and so the other one wouldn't, the other one wouldn't, the other one would then lower another penny, and then another one, and so on and so forth. So you've got this competition at the same corner for the people to drive in. And they post the signs on the board that says, you know, 99 cents for gas or 86 cents for gas back in the time when this was happening like this. So, and you still see it today. I just remember it being very prevalent in the past. So the point is, people use price to drive volume. People use price to drive customer activity. As people use price to drive volume, then that means mortgage bankers typically do the same thing. And when they do that, it's going to lower the revenue at the same time the expense is going up. So what are you going to do? Who are you going to call? You got to call your finance department, your KPI department, and say, how much can we shrink margins and still make money? How do you know? What's your roadmap? Have you forecasted your business to know that as you reduce your margin in order to stay competitive, that you're still going to make money? We're working with a number of different companies to help build out their reporting infrastructure so that they can know, have their finger on the pulse, and know they lower the rates by a fraction of a percent, what does that do to their bottom line 3 months from now? And if you can't answer that question right now today, then you don't have the right kind of reporting, because you have to know that, or you're going to crash as
you're
the competitive
crash.
Environment increases. You know, you're going to be the car that crashes in the gas station and blows the whole thing up. So you've got to know the answer to this stuff. So, I'll get off my soapbox now, Dave. But this
well,
is a big, big issue.
It's a huge issue. When you have margins contracting, you have a shift in production from a refinance to a purchase market, all these things, and what are the dynamics? And if people are not tracking this or not paying attention to this, they can just watch so much of their winnings just go right out the back door, right through the bottom of the sieve because they're not tracking it. Thank you so much, Profit Doctor, for being
My pleasure,
here with
Dave.
Us. It's good to have you always here. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. I'm excited about a new series of broadcasts. We're going to be running a multi-week. It's going to go at least 6 weeks, if not 8 weeks long. So for the next 2 months, we're focusing on loan originations because there has been so much that is going on in this, and I'm excited to be here at the Chairman's Conference, which I'm at the in Colorado Springs at the Broadmoor, listening to the presidents, the owners of some of the largest mortgage companies in the United States talking about what are the changes that are coming, where is it at, what has changed, what hasn't. And then I leave here and I go to the Mastermind 2013 event put on by Stephen Marshall in Las Vegas, and I'm going to be taking in all the speakers there, interviewing a number of them, hopefully have a number of those segments coming on the radio in upcoming broadcasts. But there's just so much, and it's such an important topic. And as we see this industry turning and changing, the sands are shifting, it is so important we really zero in on this very, very important topic. So I'm excited to be bringing it. And let's get it started right into it. Alice, I'm in this unusual place. Usually I'm leading off and starting to ask the questions, but now I'm starting this segment. So I'm the focus of the Hot Topic segment for the time that we have
left. Yeah, you're the star right now. This is what we love. You know, so everybody, Dave Wicken is our special guest today on the radio show. we want to hear from Dave because he's just such a wealth of knowledge. So let's get started, Dave. What hasn't changed? Maybe we need to just kind of say what is still the same and perhaps valuable or not good that is still hasn't changed.
Yeah, I think the number one thing that hasn't changed is, number one, is mortgage lending is a key to the economy. I mean, housing and mortgage lending, this is an industry, and that's not going to change. Now, there's a lot of aspects about what we're doing that will be changing, but as it relates to what's going on and the importance of originations, the mortgage process, everything we do here, that's obviously not changing. Another key component that is not changing is this is a relationship business. Now, how we form our relationships, I'm going to get into, and we have a series of a number of broadcasts talking about social media and things like that. There's some changes happening, but we can't get away from the number one fact. It's still a relationship business. I was talking to someone who is an industry veteran. I mean, this person has been, if I mention his name, he's here at the conference. He was just buying and selling a house and doing some things, and he's been in the industry, got tons of experience. Guess what? He was wanting to have his hand held through this process because he's going, this is my transaction. So another thing that hasn't changed is this is the biggest transaction in most people's lives. Even for those of us in the business, it's the biggest financial transaction or one of the biggest. And we want to talk about it. We want to get the reassurance. Am I getting the right best rates? I mean, listening to Joe's comments, reading his updates constantly, what's happening? That won't be changing. All of that and that sense of a need for hand-holding is here. Even for those of us in the business, we want to be reassured that this is going on. So for the loan originator, you're in a very secure place in a secure job. Your job is secure. The position you hold is secure. But oh my gosh, how we go about that job, how we go about things, that is what is about to change. Also about to change is the refinance. So let's probably a good interesting part would be, and I know, Joe, you have to drop fairly quickly. So if we don't, I want to get on what hasn't changed and get around to each of you. And, Joe, I want to throw it off to you because I know you have to leave here pretty quickly because you have to exit the broadcast a little bit earlier than normal. So, I mean, I love your thoughts on it. What hasn't changed.
What hasn't changed is that this is still a manufacturing business in a way, in that we are given a set of specifications by somebody. We build that product, and we sell that product, and we start on it on the next one. And so that involves a couple of things. One is what hasn't changed is that we still pretty much get all our direction from a few entities like Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie, or FHA, VA.
Yep.
And what hadn't changed is we still securitize loans. We make them and then we sell them, and we sell them in the same format. Maybe fewer opportunities or outlets for that, but consistent process that allows for and we've maintained a good deal of efficiency in utilizing this standard set of rules to sell by, and then the delivery process to get the cash back and start again.
And I think to your point, I mean, what your service, what hasn't changed is the need for MBS quote line. I mean, we're going to have volatility. In fact, probably more so, and it's going to be becoming more and more volatile as we see some of these shifts in from a refinance to a purchase market, what's happening with interest rates. That's a big component of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see these shifts. But those are things that have been around for a long, long time.
Well, and one element of that, Dave, is what hasn't changed is that we allow a customer to lock. We allow them to lock before it closes, and that puts interest rate risk on the company issuing the lock, and they have to do something about that, and they lay it off to the next guy, or they let their customer know that they are not going to be able to lock until they get closer to close. So anyway, that part hadn't changed, and that introduces pipeline risk, interest rate risk along with that.
No question. So those things haven't changed. Andy, Prophet Doctor, and Alice, any things that you want to put on here? Because I think it's important to talk about what hasn't changed because what is about to change and in the process changing is so significant you begin to think it's all new, but it's not. So let's head over to the Prophet Doctor.
Well, Dave, one of the things that you know about my career is that I started out with a commercial bank in mortgage lending in 78. So I spent all the way up through with Bank of America. So I spent a career in mortgage lending within a portfolio and secondary marketing activity, you know, capital markets at Bank of America,
right,
where we sometimes would take a billion to the market and set the price for the day. So the reality of the things, some of the things we're facing is something that I've seen all my career. So as a bank, FDIC bank mortgage lender, the compliance issues that we had to address and the examination challenges that we faced is something we've been doing my entire career. This isn't new. Now, for the mortgage bankers, the compliance requirements and the testing and the examination process, for the CFPB is going to be new. But for the bank lenders, the commercial bank mortgage lenders, it's the same. It's nothing's changed. As we look at the technology platforms, some of the coolness and the GUI interfaces and the slickness of some of the technology happens and how it happens on laptops, you know, that's new, or even how applications happen on, you know, cell phones and iPads and whatnot. That's new. There's technology because the technology is continuing to change, but the fundamental purpose of the technology really hasn't changed. And in some respects, go ahead.
And I was going to say, so from a standpoint, for the bankers there, it's not going to change because they've been dealing in a highly regulated environment. What you're saying is, but for those that have not been, the mortgage broker, the mortgage banker, the independent, not a part of a regulated institution, that is going to be a change, and that is going to be a fairly significant shift.
Well, the caveat to that, though, Dave, is that they've always been in a regulated environment. We've had RESPA as long as I can remember. RESPA has always been there, and the rules and the disclosures and the consumer protection requirements have been there for a long time. That's not new either. The thing that's new is if a mortgage banker was serious about compliance and did compliance well, then that even that's going to be okay because that's still the same. What's different is having what you did tested. That's the part that's new.
Yeah, that's the part. And Alice, that really comes back to you. And how are people testing? And so from your perspective, what hasn't changed?
Well, it's funny because, Andy, it was a perfect segue, because to me what hasn't changed is that the loan originator has always had the responsibility of looking out for the borrower, finding the best product for the customer. You know, fair lending, RESPA, all those have always been out there, and there's a newer realization to that, but that's always been there. This short list of what you're accountable for, delivering disclosures. You know, when I got in this in 82, you still had to get the forms out in 3 days. You have the technology actually makes things easier, but it doesn't mean some of those responsibilities went away. So the responsibilities of an originator haven't changed. They just have a bigger magnifying glass on them right now, I think.
And I think that's probably also one of the best ways of talking about what has changed. The focus on the originator, the accountability has changed. That perspective, while you could argue they're always been accountable, yes, but in the bigger picture, the reality is a good number of them have not felt the scrutiny that they are going to do. So there is a change coming as it relates to the regulatory environment, the world we're in. And Andy, on the call report, I mean, there's a lot more detailed information of who's involved in the transactions, how we're being measured. You always talk about measurements, Andy, and everybody is going to have a sense of that. While it hasn't changed, I have this saying, nothing's different, but everything's new, and it's going to feel new, Andy. Thoughts?
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. The call report's a great example for mortgage lenders, especially because it's new for mortgage lenders to have to provide that information. And the accuracy that it has to be embedded within the reports is new, and not for commercial banks. It's for the mortgage banks it is. And we were recently in an organization, a mortgage company, and in looking at some of their details and looking at the call report, they had a fairly unsophisticated finance group, and one of the things that's required in the call report is there's a cash flow statement. And without getting into the details about what a cash flow statement is, it's complicated. Just leave it at that. And they weren't able to figure it out. Now, these guys, what most mortgage companies do that only submit annually, they use their CPA to help do it. But these guys have to submit quarterly. So I asked them, so how did you submit your call report? And you know what they said?
No.
We just didn't do it. We left that part off. We didn't know how to do it, so we just skipped it. No.
And we just skipped it.
We just left it off. So, you know,
that's a pretty good-sized company,
option.
Too.
Yeah, it was. How did that even become on the list of choices? But so for mortgage companies that operate like that, this is going to be a big change. For those that wanted to do it right, plan to do it right, expect to do it right the first time, I think that it's going to be fine. But like you say, Dave, the focus on production is still – we are the pathway to the American dream. People don't pay cash for a house very often. They get it for They get it through financing. And just like when you were an originator and walked through a realtor's office, it was like you had Velcro on you and all the applications stuck to you as you walked out. That is still the case. You get these dynamic, bright, good-looking folks to go walking through these realtor's offices, and they walk out with applications just like you did. And so that's still the same. And if people want to learn how to do that, they should ask you, because there's a secret.
We are going to be talking about that in this series.
There's a secret sauce, and only Dave Licken knows it.
Well, it's interesting as we talk about what has changed, what hasn't changed. Alice, one of the things that has changed is this MAPS regulation. So when it comes to the rate sheet that I used to hand out, whether the ad that I used to run, the internet information I have up on my website, all of that has changed. And we're going to be having a whole segment on compensation and the regulation and the regulations like MAPS. And Alice, again, refresh everyone's mind just what that is and give them a little teaser what's coming, and then we're almost out of time.
Well, the Mortgage Acts and Practices / advertising that came out under Regulation Z was very detailed about how things you can and cannot say in advertising. And I think folks would be really surprised when you really sit down and read. So I have a MAP checklist that customers have asked for, and I'm happy to send that out if anyone would like to see it, because you think your ads are fine. And as you said, Dave, you just got to be careful with everything on a rate sheet. It's not just simply the interest rate. So that lots of challenges, even down to that very simple detail of things I give to my realtors.
Listeners, here's why we're putting on this series of broadcasts, especially for you originators in our audience. The number one thing is we care about you. We want you to be successful. We want you to be informed on what's going on. And there is a change. What's changed is the population of who we have doing these, doing the originations. The average originator, we're going to have Pat Sherlock on talking more about this again. Pat says the average age of our originator across the industry is 52 years old. There's a new crop of originators coming into the industry. What are they facing? What is it going to take to get them to the point up to speed? And many of us that have these old habits, the way we've been going about it, we have a definite advantage, but that younger crowd has a unique advantage when it comes to how to do what it goes back to, establish a relationship. Again, we've said earlier, it's a relationship-driven business. Social media I can't begin to tell you how effective it can be to establish that connection. And the tool, if you are not up to that. So we're going to be having a series of broadcasts on social media, those that are using it effectively, how it's being used, what's working, what's not working. Where should you be going on that? We're going to be talking with folks with different strategies. I mean, the person that is out in the field versus the person that has a call center. Are call centers working? The series that we're going to be doing on this broadcast over the next 6 to 8 weeks, you do not want to miss any of it. I'm going to be going out and interviewing, especially in Las Vegas this week, interviewing some of the top originators, some of the top speakers on this, and I'm so excited to be bringing all this information to you. It's going to be great. We're looking forward to having you be a part of it. Be sure to not miss any of the broadcasts that we have coming up on this very important topic, and we'll do our best to get some of the best. And by the way, remember, email me. Email me at Dave, or D at D Licken, as in D as in Dave, LYKKEN, at MBS, Mortgage Banking Solutions -team.com, or any of us, Joe or Alice or Andy, the Profit Doc, any of us, contact us with what you would like to see covered. We're doing this for you. We're doing this so that you stay informed on what has changed and what hasn't, and how you relate, and how you can be more effective in this new world we're going to. It's a purchase business. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of information out there. So we appreciate you being a part of the broadcast. I want to say a special thank you again to all of our listeners, but also to our sponsors, United Guarantee and Alamo. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Go check out their website. On our website, lickinonlending.com, you can go to the right-hand corner. Check out the United Guarantee ad and click on it and check them out, all the services they're offering. Also, we want to say to Andy, to Alice, to Joe, and all, and as Tony, and now Paul, thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast. Appreciate you. Check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. We got a whole of the page, both on Facebook and LinkedIn. It's excellent. We appreciate you. Tell others about this upcoming broadcast, and we look forward to being back with you next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending. a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.